welcome to Untold, the podcast that goes behind the scenes interviewing founders and business leaders about their untold journeys. We go further than botched up deliveries. It's tough out there, and we want to tell the hardships that go with it and the effects this can have on guests' mental health. Key insights and tangible takeaways to help you, our listeners, continue on your journey. I'm Harry Turpin, founder of The Savourists, and I'm also your host. Let's do it. As always, keep jiggling. Welcome to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes to interview founders, leaders, thought provokers about their untold stories. We have a very exciting guest on today, Carl from Holgood, founded Holgood. How are you doing, mate?
Good, man. Good. Thanks for having me on.
No. Thank you for coming in. It's we're January. We're at the second week of Jan now. Like geared up for 2023. We go again, right?
Yeah, we go again.
So I know a load of our listeners will know who you are. They certainly will know who Holgood is.
Well, brands, I suppose. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So I think it would be great to give before we sort of get onto everything, just kick off by giving us a bit of colour to you, like your kind of career so far, where Holgood came from.
Yeah.
Because I know we share the whole theatrical thing in
comedy. Yeah, yeah. So although I am now a wholesaler, I have had a very varied career. So I was a professional actor from ridiculously the age of 7.
Amazing.
I went to theatre school from the age of 9. So I was always an actor right from the beginning. So that was my journey. That was what I did. But I did start other things all the way through. I always had side hustles. So I've had a very varied sort of work life because there would always be downtime when you weren't acting.
Yeah.
And I could not bear to just sit still. So I would always be starting stuff, you know, in the gardening business. Opened a bar with a couple of friends when I was 17 in Ladbroke Grove.
Nice.
Lots and lots of bits and bobs, you know.
Yeah.
But ultimately, my main passion was acting. I did okay in the art business that I started. I did used to represent several graffiti artists in the mid-2000s, and that was predominantly from a love of Banksy's early work. And just randomly a couple of good friends were actually renting space to Banksy, or the people that at least published his work at the time in print. And that really inspired me. I used to buy a lot of his work because it was extremely cheap. It was like 75 quid.
Yeah.
You know, so you'd just like be buying it like expensive posters.
Yeah.
And then when the market really started to change and lots of people started to get into it and the values really crept up, I saw a real opportunity to get into actually working with the artists, pushing their work, put on 2 or 3 shows, you know, put a really long show on actually in Carnaby Street in 2008, I think it was, which was after I'd started Holgood.
Yeah.
But then once I raised a small amount of money for Holgood, and actually it was no longer the right, I could not do both. And my passion was really, I really fell in love with fresh produce.
Yeah.
So that's really how Holgood started, in that like I really liked that vibrancy of the product.
Yeah.
And I didn't want a business that I wanted kind of something that was relatively guilt-free.
Yeah.
I didn't want to sell plastic widgets.
Yeah.
I wanted something vibrant, something, you know, something that I enjoyed. And I was massively into organic food from a really young age, because as a teenager, girlfriend of mine, her father was absolutely obsessed with organic food.
Amazing.
Got us really into it. He lived in Holloway, and back then, like, you know, I don't know, late 90s, there was a shop, it's still there, fantastic shop called Bumblebee on Brecknock Road.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like where you went, you know?
Yeah.
So I would go there once a week, buy all my organic stuff, you know, everything was filthy and dirty in terms of, like, you know, the fruit and veg. And,
yeah.
And that's where I really discovered that I really enjoyed it and started to learn about other organic standards and or biodynamic produce. They would often have, you know, they would the different logo, and I would, you know, be obsessed with color and stickers, and you know, yeah. So just literally naturally picking up on things.
Yeah.
So when I started Whole Good, it was just fruit and veg, and we did okay. You know, Whole Good is a fully bootstrapped business, right?
Yeah.
I'm 14, 15 years in.
Yeah, amazing.
So we haven't done, you know, there was no passion for the kind of food that I was in 2008.
Yeah. It was not
like, you know, there's lots of brand, you know, all of like the vegan movement.
Yeah.
And, you know, lots of that was really small.
Yeah.
And so
I guess it was just like green and blacks, right?
I remember, like, you know, probably earlier than 2007, but yeah, if you wanted green and blacks, you had to go to Oxfam.
Yeah.
It was only sold in Oxfam.
Yeah.
So it was all, you know, I mean, that was probably earlier.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was super niche, like super, super niche.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, when you have brands coming through, you know, there's a passion to raise, and there's a momentum that they can gain because the whole market's moved in that way.
Yeah.
And in many respects, that's what's propelled Whole Good. We were essentially early.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like we were early.
Yeah.
Felt really lonely.
Yeah.
But we were early.
Yeah.
And so as the opportunities arose, as the market kind of built,
yeah,
we appeared to just be in the middle of it.
Yeah, amazing.
Just like a giant roundabout.
Amazing. Yeah. I remember a friend of mine, I guess he is a friend, he was, when I worked at Causton Press, one of the directors there, a very successful man called William Kendall, he said to me at the time, he said, if you want to set up a business, make sure you're either first or better, and ideally both. And to your point, when you're at that kind of, like, just a little bit early, then you can ride that wave as it comes through.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not something that, you know, I did feel like organic would grow.
Yeah.
I wanted organic to grow. It was something that I believed in, and I wanted to be somebody that pushed that.
Yeah.
I really wanted to do it for the purpose. But obviously, we moved into other areas and beyond fruit and vegetables. So while fruit and veg was growing, and while we were finding different and unique ways of selling it, you know, it sounds ridiculous, but there were opportunities. Because we had disrupted that market in a good way, it became really clear that actually there were many areas in wholesale that were slow, lazy,
not looking to innovate. Yeah.
And a lot of these people, sort of market makers, really, you know, 20-year-old businesses that have been around for some time.
Yeah.
So they were the market. They owned the market.
Yeah.
And no one had really disrupted that market much, because how do you set up a wholesale business?
Yeah.
You know, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think it's really difficult, even if you raised a lot of money, because it's hard to just go out and grab loads of customers.
Yeah,
and I think that
one
of the benefits was the slowness of the start, because we really understood what we were in.
Yeah.
We understood the opportunity, where certain people, what certain competitors were covering, where they were strong, where they weren't so strong.
Yeah.
And so over time, as the confidence built in me and the business, one suddenly realized, oh, we can just like, we can disrupt
food.
We don't just have to try to disrupt this little bit.
That's great.
There's opportunity everywhere.
Yeah.
And we would be crazy to not pursue it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, sometimes it feels like I am crazy for pursuing it. But, you know, you don't really know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're 100%. Not making decisions that are really well planned. You know, when you're building a wholesale business, you're looking for reach and logistics and you're looking to build a network. You know, and you're trying to add vehicle after vehicle and giant fridge after giant fridge. You know, you're having to build a lot of infrastructure. And I suppose I massively underestimated that. Because I started so small, you know, started in a disused bakery in Park Royal. With a tiny, tiny walk-in fridge, with a tiny, tiny door that had everything had to be carried through and carried out. You know, so it was like it was back-breaking work. But actually, those times were quite important because that slow start and that slow realization of, oh shit, like this is going to need a bigger warehouse and then another bigger warehouse. And then, you know, so.
It's grassroots stuff, isn't it? It's like learning from the ground up.
Massively.
There's no substitute for that, really, is there?
No. And I think that we got, because it felt like the organic market was not moving as fast as I wanted it to, we actually, you know, before we only started wholesaling brands in 2018, 2019. So I massively went into warehousing logistics for other food businesses. And that is what really gave me the break in terms of space. Because I signed a large deal with a large organic company. Five-year contract, and which allowed me to go from, so I went from the bakery to a 2,000 square foot warehouse in Park Royal. So that felt like a massive jump. But then the real jump came when we won that contract. And I persuaded them that I'd be able to deliver on what they needed. And we went from 2,000 square foot to 22,000 square foot.
Wow.
With, amazing. With not really knowing that we could fill a third. But not knowing if we could fill the other two thirds, and that was that was the big risk moment. I mean, there's probably there's been plenty since then, but but that was the real okay. This is a really big step change. I'm not completely convinced that I know what I'm doing, but I know enough. And you know, actually, there would have been lots of things that I was not understanding, like the importance of how to build a team or. So far that it had been a team of like me and then just a couple of other people. So all those learnings came once we moved into a big warehouse.
And you have to.
And it was like, oh god, right, we need so many more people and we have to wear high vises. Like it was so basic. Really basic.
But you learn, right? I remember we had in November we ran a live podcast episode with Josh White, who founded Can of Water, and a few other people. And he said to me, he was like on the podcast, he speaks about like how once you get that team in place, it's just game changing, because you then go from that moment of like, fuck, I'm trying to do everything, to now going like, I'm still doing everything, but I've got everyone else's support who are professionals in what they're doing, and they're going out and you can kind of trust them to do it. And I think that whole process
That's also really difficult, because I think that one of the challenges when you're bootstrapping and growing, still growing quite quickly, you know, we're a 37, 38 million pound business now. You know, over the next 12 months, we'll get to close to 60. That also, those earlier stages, like when you're going like 1 million to 3 to 6 to 9 to 12. Actually, that's really difficult, because you can't, you are bringing in a senior team in those lower years, but they're not necessarily the team that take you from 20 million to 50 million. It's a whole different headspace, it's a whole different type of leader. So
An extra level on top, I guess, right?
Well, yes, but then that's quite difficult as well, because when you've got senior managers at that smaller stage, they often those people would potentially want to stay in those positions and expect to be promoted through. Whereas sometimes it's just there's maybe a ceiling to certain types of management style or leadership quality. And experience. You need someone that understands the structural changes and the business that is growing fast. And if you're trying to build a £100 million business and it's in wholesale, the infrastructure requirement is massive. You can't just sort of go, we need another massive shed. We need another 30,000 square foot chiller. The planning and the budgeting so you very quickly move beyond people's experience, and that's actually quite painful as an owner and a founder, because you sort of think, they might be coming to the end of the
road
of the journey. And actually, when it's smaller and it's exciting, and you're thinking like, we're just gonna do this together, and then suddenly you're like, oh no, they're like massively dropping the ball.
And I
feel like I'm now beginning to know instinctively what to do more than they are.
100%.
But I mean, obviously, I was always the CEO, so I didn't hand over. That level of authority, but below me was where it was becoming challenging.
You can start seeing it, can't you? I think it becomes very obvious.
I think the biggest shift was actually then deciding not to be the CEO.
Yeah,
and I did that in May 22.
Yeah,
so last year, so 9 months ago or whatever it is.
Yeah,
and that's the really weird one.
Yeah,
because
did you find that tough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really tough. I mean, it was exciting.
Yeah.
And I've got an incredible CEO.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
Martin Sandler, my CEO now, was just clearly the guy for me.
Amazing.
And I think that actually there's the key skills of being a CEO.
Yeah.
But then I suppose what I didn't really think about, but luckily he had the skills, was like, then how does the CEO deal with the neurotic owner, right? now that they're not the CEO.
That was
very separate from the business, but there was a challenge for me, I think not really for the business, but for me, you sort of go, okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of decisions being made.
Yeah.
They all look great, which is great, right? I mean, it must be awful when you maybe feel like you've made the wrong decision.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm so grateful to not know what that feels like.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, I wasn't stepping out to business. I had always been focused on the growth.
Yeah.
And I would say that I was sort of growth first, CEO second. And I think that's where you start to get to a bit of a challenge. So I'd got the business to like 32 million... bootstrapping the hell out of it, absolutely killing myself. And then it was like, okay, no, I'll just be the growth guy.
Yeah.
I'll just focus on the growth.
Yeah, great.
And then somebody more experienced than me and that just eats this stuff for breakfast
amazing.
Can deal with it.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
actually the experience of building it and the challenges of building it had also just wrung me out. They'd just wrung me dry. So when you're sort of going, okay, what does getting to 60 or 70 million look like? You just know inside. Like I was just like, I could probably do that, but I wonder how badly that's going to affect me.
Yeah.
And I'd already kind of knocked myself out.
So you kind
of have to look at the tank and kind of go, no, I'm just too low on fuel.
Yeah.
I don't know if and then you've got a lot of employees at that point, right?
Yeah,
so
you've
got 150 people, then 140 people.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, no, this is not about me anymore. Mm. It might have been about me when it was me, but this is about those people and all the people they support.
Yeah.
How can I possibly lead this business if I have any doubt in myself about leading the business?
Amazing.
It is, you are duty bound as the owner in that respect
to
ensure the success of your business and not be the dick
yeah.
that wants to just not let go of the control.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. And it's amazing to... Did you always have that much awareness around it, or did you get to a stage where, like, a process of coming to this kind of thought process? Or did you always know that it was coming?
It was coming. I thought I might be the CEO all the way, like, just all the way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because this isn't necessarily a business that we just want to grow and sell. You know, it's a business that can fulfill lots of ambition for people.
Yeah.
It can create career paths for people.
Yeah.
And you know, that's really important.
Yeah.
So no, I thought that I would just be like bumping along leading the business.
Yeah.
But it changed very quickly. And actually it changed, I think. It was driven massively by COVID, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Really.
Yeah.
Because we bounced from like we doubled during COVID. That was like a £12 million bounce.
Wow.
So we went like 10 to 22 or 11 wow. to 22 or whatever.
Wow. What drove that?
Fruit and veg.
Okay, yeah.
And brands.
Yeah.
I mean, and brands. I mean, we had been lucky but unlucky in that the Marigold Foods had burnt down to the ground horribly at the end of 2019. So we found ourselves in this position where we'd been a secondary supplier. We were becoming the main supplier. And there was, you know, trucks were literally being diverted from on their way to Marigold to us.
Wow.
And we were taking product in and just taking pictures of it.
Yeah.
And then contacting the brand.
Yeah.
Or having the brand. Some brands were super sharp. Some brands, the fire was on a Saturday morning. I had brands ringing me by lunchtime Saturday.
Yeah.
Saying, I've actually got a lorry outside Marigold. Or it's round the corner.
Wow.
It couldn't deliver because the road was closed.
Yeah.
And then you realize how it was. Yeah. I mean, just like, regardless of who competes with who, no one wants to see that.
No, of course.
It's terrifying.
Of course. And I think it also really signifies for me, like, that kind of, there's always a winner in every situation, but B, it's that quote where it's like, the king is dead, long live the king, where you're like, it in a flash where you're going, you're getting brands being like, there's been a fire, and literally an hour later, right, we'll just move this to here then. And it's like, life is, I guess that's just life in general, right? But,
they're big moments, and they're ugly moments as well.
Yeah.
And also, I think one of the things is that you don't feel like, that wasn't a business decision where you sit down and go, okay, yes, let's think strategically that we're going to build the wholesale side of the business by another 6 to 8 million this year.
Yeah.
That decision's just suddenly been made for you.
Yeah.
You haven't budgeted for it.
Yeah.
You don't have a strategy for it.
Yeah.
But you suddenly realize that you are kind of duty bound to do it.
Yeah.
Because the whole market, like the shops are empty. Literally.
Yeah. I mean, of course it has to happen. Right, it's not there's no and it's not just going to stop. No one's going to stop supplying the shops, right? So it's just a question of moving it across. It's the same with Tree of Life, right? When that when that happened, but it's
going back to my original point, I think that so that had just happened, and we were just trying to catch our breath from that, and then February, I'd gone to sort of Expo West in LA.
Amazing.
And I was there, and suddenly people started to talk about like lockdowns and social, and I was thinking, oh no, this is what's going on? This is nuts.
Yeah.
And then Expo West got cancelled. And I was like, oh, okay, this is not cool. And then got back to the UK and got COVID, like, really bad, wiped me out. So then I suddenly realised that it was quite real because I'd had it.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Yeah.
And and we walked into lockdown.
Yeah.
So the poor guys at Holgood just didn't have time to breathe.
Yeah.
We had just got over the hurdle of getting all of that stuff in, all of the product in, and suddenly we were a wholesaler and not just fruit and veg anymore.
Yeah, yeah, mad.
And then we were going into COVID and doubling the business.
Yeah, amazing.
So it you know, I'm not really sure that that's anything that anybody would really wish for.
No.
But I can't reflect on that in any other way and be proud
of
everybody that worked through that
of
with
course.
Us.
Yeah, absolutely. You absolutely.
Know, we're now obviously getting crucified by all the overhang of holiday. You know, like, no one's ever there, right? You know, but you know, it's a small price to pay. But so, yeah, actually, you know, those moments where you really bump and grow, it's not like we were a brand and we were like, well, we've got these massive retailers coming on, and we're going to do an out-of-home marketing campaign because the distribution will be really wide, and we're going to see this £5 million shift or whatever it is. You just suddenly get more stuff.
There's suddenly more stuff.
There's a very different sort of structure.
And
obviously it all takes a lot of infrastructure. So we were moving into warehouses during building massive chillers during COVID. It was extraordinary.
Yeah, crazy. And I guess as well, they're like bringing on some of the brand stuff. Did that help? Because a lot of that would have been ambient, and I presume a majority of what we're doing before was fresh. So from a storage perspective, did that kind of help as well in the growth?
Or no, because a lot, the ambient wasn't so difficult for people to move.
Okay, yeah.
There are more ambient wholesalers, right? Okay, I mean, right. Ambient wholesale is not... it's not rocket science.
No,
No, it's chilled, but chilled is harder.
Yeah.
So we disproportionately had a very big share of that.
Yeah, amazing.
Obviously, we've grown into ambient massively because we're about fulfilling, you know, creating a one-stop shop solution because we do all of the fresh produce as well.
Yeah.
But we were heavily under pressure, and hence we needed to build like another 10,000-15,000 square foot chiller during COVID just to cope with fruit and veg. And we had like lorries with chillers on storing stuff. And then eventually, we were coming out of COVID, but as we were getting into some really big new customers, we had one of those giant inflatable fridges in the car park.
Amazing. Like a bouncy castle. I love it.
That, you know, upside down bouncy castle.
Amazing.
It would become really difficult. And then we had to make the really big step of doubling our space, and luckily on the same estate where we were, and then dedicating like one large building to the wholesale brands, chilled and ambient, and then the fruit and veg taking over the entire warehouse of where we had run both sides of the business before COVID.
Amazing! Wow.
Yeah, it was. Wow. It was extremely random.
And how did you cope personally with that? Like outside of work,
I don't think I did cope.
Yeah.
Particularly well.
Yeah.
I don't feel. I mean, yeah, I wasn't crying myself to sleep each night, but we just had to work really hard, and it wasn't really different to how I worked because I had spent 13 years previous to that working really hard. I mean, it's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
And I've never been good at moderating myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no moderation button in me that sort of says, well, I've got to look after myself now. I need some downtime.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not really something, it's obviously really important, but they're my biggest challenges. So I think one of the things that we felt very duty bound to supply fresh food during COVID.
Yeah.
So you did feel like there was a bit more purpose in what you were doing.
Yeah.
And the market became much friendlier.
Yeah.
And that stuck a little bit, actually. I think buyers and everybody become a bit nicer.
Yeah.
Because we knew we were all doing something that was valuable, because actually 100%. People were really worried about food.
Yeah.
It was not necessarily going to be a food crisis.
Yeah.
It was the fear that really drove that. And of course, that fear then creates a crisis because people start to panic buy.
Yeah.
Whereas the reality was, you know, supply chains weren't necessarily going to stop. Things were going to become harder. But actually, I think as we were going into lockdown, people just thought a bit too much about Hollywood movies and that no one would leave. I mean, I remember going to work once I'd recovered from COVID and lockdown was happening. I remember driving to work and just being surprised that the road was so busy.
Yeah.
You know, because you kind of like that really insular vision of like oh, well, I'll be the only person on the road. Like, no, all the other, you know, the much more essential services are running.
It's it's amazing, isn't it? But what I think has also potentially stuck from a supply perspective and certainly a consumer journey perspective is like we'd go to our local butchers and the queue is halfway down the road.
Yeah.
Where like I love to shop locally anyway, so I'll go to the local deli, I'll go to the butcher, I'll go to because I love doing that at weekend and it's something to look forward to and a kind of special treat as it were. But you'd speak to these guys and they'd be like, I just don't want to go to it. Consumers just wouldn't want to go to a supermarket. So they'd start going and their Friday night, they couldn't do anything anymore. So let's get a nice piece of meat from the butcher or let's go and do a really nice shop at a deli. And I think that's potentially stuck as consumer habits, which I think is such a lovely thing to have come from a really shitty situation.
Yeah, I definitely think that some of it stuck. It's an interesting one because during COVID, there was such a strong opinion that the shifts in the market were permanent, you know.
Yeah.
And actually so much of it was actually quite transient. And I think that it was very, very difficult to make decisions as a business.
Yeah.
Especially when we were deciding on the extra space. We were like, is this just going to run and run? You know, when does this...
I
remember initially in lockdown, like saying to my senior team, how do we, you know, this is going to be over in what, a month? And there was like people in the office shaking their head going like, no, this is like a year of craziness. And you know, just trying to weigh up like, what, how long does this last? What does this look like? It was very hard to make good kind of clear decisions. You're not working on fact.
Well, I guess that's where you naturally, well, anybody that I've interviewed and that runs businesses, that's almost their natural safe space because there was no, you go back to when you first started it in the disused bakery, you're like, there was no script that took you to where you got to, right?
Absolutely.
And then there you find yourself in COVID.
There is an element of thriving in the insecurity of it all.
Yeah.
Because obviously sometimes when you're founding a small business that then ends up growing quite quickly, you thrive on that.
Yeah.
What's next? Yeah. What's happening? Yeah. The ups and downs. You know, you kind of say that you don't you want it to be softer or smoother, but actually, there's a thrill in it that I think ends up becoming slightly addictive.
Oh, 100%.
And that then becomes a challenge as you grow because I think while I enjoyed that to an extent in the earlier days, what it ended up doing is thoroughly wringing me out personally, because as it got bigger, you take on all of those problems and those problems become bigger and bigger. And you almost don't empower your team enough to take responsibility because you're so used to sucking in everything that it's just a really big negative vacuum that starts to destroy you a bit.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how quickly that flips.
Yeah.
That bit that keeps it interesting and that bit that keeps you motivated can really turn inward and harm you because it's not a good way to run a business when it's a reasonable scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you just cannot
take
responsibility for everything.
Yeah.
You can do your best.
Yeah.
But you just cannot take personal responsibility for bad decisions made by other people or a lack of direction that you might have given them around a certain thing, or you know, you just end up becoming a world of negative thoughts because you start to very quickly think about all the things that you've not achieved. Whereas actually maybe when you've got that headspace and some good leaders, you can find the time eventually to reflect on the fact that you did do some things right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you go from the disused bakery to now your crazy turnover numbers, right? I mean, if you go back to where you were there when you first started and someone said to you that you're going to be here in X amount of years, you'd probably turn around and be like, fucking hey, this is amazing, right?
Well, yeah, I would have been, but I wouldn't have also understood what it would be like to own a business of this size.
Yeah.
I don't really see, I know, there might be Instagram stories full of these owners or YouTube full of certain owners, but, you know, I don't really see that kind of bit of, well, and now we relax.
Yeah.
I don't understand where that button is.
I think there's a lot of people, and I was talking to my wife about this as well, because I'm exactly the same. I think irrespective of what happens to the Savorists, or I'm sure for you as well with Holger, like whatever happens, I don't think anybody I've ever interviewed is just going to go like, oh, okay, that's great, like amazing.
No, sure. But I also think what you don't know and what you underestimate is, for example, now at the size we are and the amount of people that we employ, just how responsible you feel for those jobs.
Yeah.
I did not think about that.
Yeah.
When I was smaller. Didn't need to, you know, we weren't employing anybody or many people. Whereas now you're thinking about how do you develop this team and that team and how can we take them on a journey?
Crazy.
How do we stop them getting bored? How do we keep it interesting?
Yeah.
How do we have a culture that people want to come to work in and enjoy?
Yeah.
You know, all of that was just totally, we're very lucky in that actually stepping away as CEO and having Martin come in, he was starting to do things very early on that were just pointed towards a better company culture.
Great.
And I'd be like, oh, it's a bit positive. That's nice. Everyone's got a shiny water bottle. Yeah. Or, oh, everyone's got a tote bag. Or, you know, he immediately come in and he was like, I think it took a couple of weeks, but he sort of like, I've heard that sort of staff can get a veg box. And I said, yeah, they can get a veg box. It's like, is there any process for that? Like, how do they know that? And I was like, you know what? I don't really know. I just felt like everyone knew they could get a veg box.
Turned out
not really many people did. Only the people that had worked for me for like 3 or 4 years. So then suddenly 2 weeks later, I'm getting an email from HR explaining that the Whole Good Pantry is now open.
Amazing.
And it will open between these hours each day.
Amazing.
And you go to this specific large chiller in the warehouse. It's all clearly labelled. Take what you want.
World
so
class.
Suddenly, you
Amazing.
Know, you just had
Great.
Everyone doing their shopping for free at Whole Good.
Yeah.
Right? And you'd see cars reversing up and boxes of spuds or, you
Amazing.
Know,
yeah,
like,
great.
Because also we can take our, what we, you know, we donate a lot to Felix Project.
Yeah.
But we can also, some of that can go in the pantry first or, you know, there's plenty
great.
To go around,
great.
Right? And equally, it's just like, you know, Christmas. Yeah. You know, just
Amazing.
Everything went in there.
So
it's just that difference of the process and making sure that everybody understands, you know, and that it's something nice for people.
Yeah.
I think because I wasn't I'm not necessarily good at being nice to myself.
Yeah.
So actually that's, you don't think about that being a blocker in business.
Yeah.
It is a blocker in business because while I feel like I know what a good work culture feels like when I walk into it, didn't necessarily know how to create that myself.
Yeah.
And now that I
That's
see
really
that happening at Whole Good, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I enjoy seeing people enjoying that environment
Amazing.
Because I'm proud to own it.
Yeah.
But that's not me.
So good.
That's
Martin.
So,
but then I guess deep down it was you. It just needed the process to come from that where you're like, great, this is now done. And because I guess if you wanted everyone to have a free veg box at the beginning, it's just then kind of formalising that and pushing
well,
it
Well, yeah,
out,
sure,
right?
But that's the point, right? Like, I didn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's lots of things that we think would be good to do, and there are things that we think that we followed through to the end, and we haven't.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
You know, as a CEO, I was a bit of a magpie. You know, as soon as I saw a little bit of silver foil on the ground, I'd be over, like, looking at that.
Yeah.
Trying to pick that. Oh, what's that? You know, and they're like, oh, I'm really focused on this. Oh, but who's outside?
Yeah.
You know, so you know, you need people that don't do that.
Yeah.
Hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Untold Podcast is brought to you by The Savourists. We're here to keep you jiggling at snack time. We have a range of mega flavour, loaded ingredient, real nutritious snacks. They taste absolutely banging. And we have a brand new range of crunchets, which are made from black beans, edamame beans, puffed rice, seasoned with a Thai chilli and a sizzling barbecue. Yes, I promise you, they are as delicious as they sound. Thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the episode and check us out at savourists.com. Ta-da!
You're used to operating in that way of like, fucking right, what's next? Let's go, let's
yeah,
go.
Yeah, yeah, jumping on a forklift, jumping off a forklift, driving a van, yeah, you know. And actually, that, you if you're doing that size, it's just
yeah,
it's such poorly, like, why yeah. is he doing that?
Yeah.
That's my job.
Yeah.
Why is it? That does not paint
yeah,
a
yeah.
professional picture
yeah.
or the right environment.
Yeah.
Okay, a lot of the guys that I've worked with historically, they know I'm prepared to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
That's good, yeah. you know. We know that if there's challenges, we've got a team that don't mind jumping in.
Yeah.
But you don't want to see the CEO on a forklift every day.
No, yeah.
Or pushing a broom.
Yeah.
You know,
that makes total sense.
Nothing wrong with pushing a broom, right? And I used to love pushing a broom.
Yeah.
It would be my thinking time.
Yeah.
Doesn't always look right though.
No.
And you don't want, you know, you have to start. It's even that thinking about what others might think or what that environment should be like.
Yeah. I mean,
it's
you
important.
Have to, right? Yeah. Amazing.
And I've never had a business of that size, so it's not like I was like, oh, well, I would like my culture to be like that, or oh, it was great when I worked there because they did that really well.
Yeah.
I didn't have that experience. I just
become
a CEO by default because I started a business that grew.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have to accept that you just don't.
Yeah.
I might know how to grow it, but I wasn't necessarily knowing how to look after people well enough, look after myself well enough.
Yeah.
All of the bits that make it nice for people.
Yeah. It's amazing. And I think it's such a. I think there's any business out there that's scaled dramatically like that from a founder led business gets to that point where you're like, founder now is not going to be the CEO or in charge. Like, you look at Ben Francis at Gymshark, did exactly the same thing, stepped back. He's now back in charge, right? But what did step back, and there's a couple of others. I had somebody who, a mate of mine that works for Loaf, the furniture company, and that was a founder-led business, and they're now bringing a CEO, and she can't wait because she's in marketing, and the founder of Loaf is running around telling her to do all sorts of different campaigns, exactly what you're saying. And she's like, well, I just kind of want someone to be like, we've got this campaign for 6 months. Like, it's now an above-the-line outdoor campaign. Like, I can't just change it every week anymore. Like, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And it's a really fascinating point. And I think it's a kind of, really interesting sort of, like, a lot of conversations we have on here about the very early days, but it's really interesting to hear as that scale really starts to kick in and you get there, how
yeah, because
how that
they
works.
Don't, you know, none of those things, all of those issues that come up, they're not issues that you have when you start the business. So it's not like when you start and you're scrapping around. That's survival.
Yeah.
That's a different skill set. You know, I'd be great in an apocalypse, right? But I might not be good at running the army of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just like,
it's
different. And you don't sit there at the beginning thinking, well, in 10 years, my management style is going to have to really be like X, Y, and Z, you know? So I think that, you know, if you could argue that, you know, founder can remain the CEO, I could have remained the CEO if I'd maybe then put an even stronger senior team around me or whatever, but who needs me in the room? You know, they don't need me distracting them.
Yeah.
They need to get stuff done.
Yeah.
So you have to really acknowledge, it's not necessarily a weakness, but you have to acknowledge that you can't have an endless skill set.
No, of course not.
It's unrealistic.
Yeah.
And if you do endeavour to do that, what kind of pressure are you putting yourself under?
Yeah.
I've got family. I've got three children.
Yeah.
You know, I want to go home and see my wife and see my three kids.
Yeah.
Maybe it would be different if that wasn't the case. But I don't understand why I would be, you know, it's just not in me to pursue that.
Great. Well, I mean, that's an amazing place to be, right? Because then everyone works from that situation. I want to make sure we have a lot of listeners who are small food and drink brands.
Yeah.
And I'm also conscious of your time, but I want to make sure that we give some tangibles to some of our listeners as well. So I know we sort of spoke very briefly about this at Bread and Jam over the summer, but brands getting in touch with Holgood, I know you've now got obviously people in place from buying perspectives and teams like that, but smaller challenger brands that are listening to this podcast that are going, I want to get stocked in Whole Foods, or I am stocked in Whole Foods, I want to get stocked in Planet Organic, I want to work with Holgood as a wholesaler, they're potentially going to be my first wholesaler, etc., etc. What when they get in touch with your team, what is it that you really look for that you go, yeah, you know what, I want to try this product, or yeah, you know what, I want to have a conversation with these guys about it? Just
that's changed a lot. I mean, yeah, initially when we started wholesaling brands, we only wanted to wholesale a handful,
yeah,
but do it really well.
Yeah,
that changed when we had to take on a lot of stuff for a lot of the key retailers,
yeah,
as Marigold. So it used to be a much more emotional decision. Yeah. I really like that. I think it could work. Let's get involved.
Yeah.
And then it either does or it doesn't, or it's somewhere in the middle. Now, because of space, you know, so obviously space is measured a lot better.
Yeah.
Now I'm not in charge. Yeah. It's not an emotional decision.
Yeah.
There's metrics that you know that are measured.
Space is money, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
and it's a lot more money than it used to be.
Yeah.
So it's predominantly led by the retailer for us.
Yeah.
A brand will need to have some key retailers, yeah, interested.
Yeah.
And it will need to form part of, you know, a lot of brands that we list. It's driven by some of our key accounts.
Yeah.
There will be some where they reach out and we think it's really interesting, but it'll still be introduced to some of our key retailers,
yeah,
before we agree a listing. Yeah, yeah. I do not think it's fair for us to, and it's a waste of time as well for everybody.
Yeah, of course it is.
To just sort of go, yeah, it looks good, let's give it a go. You know, it's ignoring the fact that the product's going to take a lot of marketing. It's going to take a lot of work from the founders or from the guys that work there.
Yeah.
So we are probably more disciplined now.
Great.
In how we look at, yeah, what's important. And equally, you know, salsa would always be a minimum requirement now, yeah, or BRC.
Yeah.
The food safety element is crucial.
Yeah.
I think when we were smaller, we would get involved in even helping with that or explaining that. It's hard to do that now because obviously we are bigger as well, the inquiry level is bigger.
Yeah.
I think brands are probably always disappointed when they don't get, you know, a really long reply or tons of feedback. But the reality is that, you know, I used to be an actor, obviously, as I said earlier, but, you know, when you're going into an audition and you've got 1 or 2 minutes and then you leave, you just don't get the job.
No.
You don't get feedback.
Yeah,
and it's not positive feedback or negative feedback. You get nothing.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the world. That's the harshness of business.
Well, yeah, of course. And people are, you're busy, right? It's just the way it is.
But I think that sometimes when you've put your heart and soul into it, whether it be creating a brand, creating a product, the same as it is learning your lines and going in and performing, you put a lot of work into a script and into your lines and into that audition,
yeah,
and you never hear anything again.
Yeah.
And that happens 3, 4, 5, 8 times a week,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
as an actor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So as a brand, if you don't get that reply and you don't get what you want, that's the hard bit.
Yeah, of course, it's reality, right?
And I don't think it's necessarily the responsibility of the business.
Of course it's not.
Any business to go back and kind of go, thank you so much.
No, of course.
We loved it.
But also, it's the responsibility of the brand. That I remember I grew up, I got my stripes at Cause and Press in field sales. So I started, my first job was at Cause and Press, the soft drinks. I got there, my boss gave me a rucksack and a load of cans and was like, off you go. I was purely there to sell into independents that would pull out of wholesalers. And I think what a lot of founders and smaller brands don't realise or forget is unlocking a wholesaler means nothing if you have an end customer, because the wholesaler is then going to supply that end customer. So if a buyer comes to, if you're getting in touch with Holger and the answer is no, go and get a Whole Foods, go and get three or four different customers.
Exactly.
And then come back and be like, ta-da, you're going to place 10 cases. These 10 cases are going to be gone by Wednesday and you need another 10 cases.
Yeah.
And I think
support it and work
forgotten.
For it. You know, the wholesaler is not the silver bullet.
Yeah.
And I remember there in the early days when we'd list brands and they would be like, well, why aren't you buying a pallet? We'd be like, well, who do you think we're going to sell it to? You don't even have any any customers. You haven't even got it into any shops.
Yeah.
Like you're relying on us to do it.
Yeah.
So I can't buy a pallet.
Yeah.
It's got 3 week shelf life.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there's a lot of unrealistic kind of expectation as well, which is always tough, especially if somebody has developed a product, then gone and made it.
Yeah.
I think often the mistakes are that, like, MPD, everyone loves it. This is going to fly. They've got the money to make it. And sometimes it feels like if you spend the money, then stuff will happen. But actually, if you spend the money, sometimes still nothing happens and you've wasted the money. 100%. So, you know, it's 100%. Super, super tricky.
100%. And I think as well, there's from that field sales perspective, there's no substitute for, like, we still do it now where, like, I mean, we haven't done it for a couple of months, but, like, where we'll go out on a monthly basis and just go and hit, like, 50 independents in East London that are still delis that will pull out of the wholesalers that we work with, because you're like, well, actually, well, I can get 20 new accounts by just walking the streets and walking in and speaking to the shop owners there and then, that will then filter through transfer orders and away you go. Like, it's, there's a lot to be said for that. I think that kind of grassroots work, it goes back to you when you were saying, like, the backbreaking work, like, you're now learning through that process. I think getting out and doing field sales work as well, you really get the understanding of, like, okay, in order for me to sell something from a wholesaler, the wholesaler has to sell it to the end customer. And just
Exactly. And actually, in the early days, when we first started wholesaling, we obviously, what come up a lot is that our fruit and veg customers were predominantly fruit and veg or delis, right?
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot of retail. So you'd get the brand to work with you. And we were often looking for exclusivity because we were trying to build back then something very different from what we've ended up doing. I mean, you know, you've got to move with it's going. Yeah, absolutely. But so at that point, because we were looking points of difference, we were trying to be quite exclusive about what we listed. But the feedback from the brand would be like, well, I've been in like 15 shops and they don't work with you. Yeah. So what we ended up doing is just setting up a really simple type form with a URL that was sort of bolted onto the end of our home website.
Yeah.
And just be like, okay, you go into the retailer. If they're interested in buying the product, get them to fill this form in. Right. We'll open the account. We'll give them a credit account.
Amazing.
And then we'll start sending them your product.
Yeah,
and actually that ended up becoming, by, like, the best way we were opening accounts.
Yeah, amazing.
Because you just had loads of hungry brands that were like, well, we really want to work with Holger's because they answer the phone.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's more niche and actually I feel quite supported and I'd like to do it this way.
Yeah,
or the other guys aren't answering me, but Holger have. Yeah. They see something different.
It's amazing.
So
then you've
actually
got, like, a 50 person deep sales team.
Exactly. Right? You just get them to all open an account. So lots of these shops would open accounts and then that would then feed into the next brand. So, brands wouldn't have necessarily known it, but they were helping each other.
Yeah.
Because, amazing. You know, people walking and trying to, walking around and trying to open accounts for us.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, getting their products sold. And that's what the aim is for them.
Love it. Amazing. Amazing. So the takeaway there is get your products into a few stores, get interest from the end customer and then get in touch.
Yeah. And accept that it's going to be hard.
Of course, yeah.
Like, it might not be. You might be surprised. But it's much better than being surprised that, like, you know, just thinking it's going to be a walk in the park.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that it's changed a lot over the past 4 or 5 years. People seem to be able to find co-packers easier.
Yeah.
There's more structure.
Yeah.
I think co-packers are more interested in newer brands because they've seen some extraordinary success.
Yeah.
I think 7-8 years ago, that was a lot harder.
Yeah.
So I think it was all a bit harder. I mean, obviously the market is now much fuller.
Yeah.
There's a lot much more out. You know, it felt like everyone started a brand during COVID.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah.
So, you know, while that's good, it does mean that there's a lot of similar products. And actually, I think while a lot of people created their own brand during the pandemic, there wasn't necessarily a lot of creativity in what was... There was a lot of...
Oh, it's the same product in different packaging.
There was a lot of that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you just be like, no, I definitely don't need another energy ball.
Yeah.
Based on dates. We are definitely full. Yeah. We only need one.
Or another extruded cheese puff.
And like, no, you know, more nut butters. I understand that there's lots of different ones. And, you know, we had lots of nut butters on the card at one point. And we just like stopped it and just started selling Pip and Nut because we liked it the most.
Yeah.
You know, and then, there were some others, but actually, you know, we got really big gym accounts. So, you know, we would just really, the kilos are for them.
Yeah.
Kilos of the gym, they've got the retails. Incredible founder, amazing brand.
Yeah.
There may be others, and I can understand them wanting to disrupt, but we also have to have some loyalty.
Yeah, of course.
Those brands, because you don't want to just cannibalize. You know, you come in and then, you know, you go and compete with these guys. There has to be some level of support.
Of course it does.
You have to have some loyalty.
Yeah.
So I think that there was a lot, while there's a lot of new brands and there's a lot going on, there's quite a lot of the same going on.
Yeah, of course.
Which does make things a little bit stagnant.
Yeah, 100%. But I also think from the takeaway from that as well is make some noise in a very different way. Like one of my sales director, I used to work with a chap called Dan Broughton. I don't know if you've ever come across him.
He was
Cause and Press. He's now working at Grenade, and he's turned into a really good mate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Really good mate of mine now. And he always said to me, he was like, your job is to just make sure we are front of mind.
Yeah.
And when you think like that, you go, we chose Pip and Nut, but actually, or we have these brands, but if you're front of mind, and I don't mean like emailing 10 times a day, I mean making sure that you, like little things, like send in something branded that they have on their desk that makes them front of mind, or getting in touch with them in a slightly different way, forming a different relationship, doing all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, as a brand, you actually do the legwork rather than just expecting a reply from sample send-ins.
And understanding that sometimes that opportunity can take time, because it might mean, you know, there might be some kind of internal shift or some sort of shift in a brand that competes with you. That, you know, maybe they go and win a load of new supermarkets and care about the independents less because they're so busy fulfilling these large orders that have to be 100%, right?
Yeah.
And there might be a moment.
Yeah.
And that's when your time will come.
Yeah.
So I think that sometimes as well, it's important for people to not just think, okay, well, that's a hard no. You know, I'll sod them. I'm going to make this work somewhere. But it's organic, it takes time, there will be other opportunities, things change, the market changes. It's also being really open to that change and accepting sometimes that first time round, you know, first push might not necessarily be great, second push maybe not, third push, doors can fly open, you know, in many different ways, with retailers, with wholesalers.
100%.
And then maybe after the third time the product's wrong.
Yeah.
Right, but it doesn't always work first time, and I think that's it's a shame sometimes when people throw in the towel a bit early.
Yeah.
Because they might have almost put a bit too much pressure on themselves financially or time.
Yeah.
And they don't give themselves enough time to breathe.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that I was sort of forced into by Wholegood, because of the nature of what I was building. It was complex and it was large. I was trying to achieve a lot in terms of having my own supply chain.
Yeah.
And because that takes time, maybe that time was helpful.
Yeah.
Brands don't always think that they have that time.
Yeah.
I was sort of forced into that track.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably quite helpful.
Yeah.
Because I would have probably lost interest and patience if it had been anything else.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think as well, just before we start to wrap up, I think that sort of realistic side of it is being able to pivot, listen to feedback, but also not be emotional about a no. And it goes back to that field sales. It's like, if you're out and if you go into 30 accounts, almost guaranteed you'll get one of them, and it will show you that no, the first no you get is probably a bit embarrassing. You sit in front of a few people that aren't in food and drink, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? It's coming in selling something randomly. But you get a no and you kind of start, and then you just start wearing your nose, and then you just sort of take off the nose, and you're like, then you get a yes, and you're like, hey, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But when you start putting pressure where it's like you're literally targeting Whole Foods, Planet Organic, Whole Good, almost guaranteed initially you're going to get three no's. But if you're targeting 30 people, you might get one yes out of that.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the bit that gets you to the next.
Yeah, but equally, I would say, like, I agree with you, and it is important to cast a wide-ish net. But equally, I would say you're probably not always going to get no's. You're going to get constructive feedback or difficult questions or questions.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And actually, it's key to understand that, own that, and answer that.
Yeah.
As opposed to getting too distracted in casting the net because you just want a yes.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I think the other thing that sometimes surprises me, but like obviously I understand, all of my guys understand that work Whole Good. We all work really hard, and we've worked really hard to make Whole Good a success. So we know what hard work looks like, and we know what it feels like, and we still get tired. We might be bigger, but we're all still tired, right? I think it's often quite annoying when there's a mistake I think that brands make, that where they're like, but I'm a founder on my own and I'm doing this, like, I'm doing this, you know? And you're like, yeah, but like, yeah, that we did too.
Yeah.
Like
we
did.
Yeah.
So, by, that's, and also, not necessarily
space is money, so unless we're going to sell it, I don't care.
So it's just we can't list you because you're tired and you're under pressure. Because we're tired and under pressure.
It's
just that maybe we've learned a bit more about how to present ourselves or how, you know, and I don't mean that in a mean way.
No, but it's good. You know, it's a reality. And I think that there's a certain tone where I feel like you...
Just don't email anyone. When you wake up and you feel like everything's going against you, but you still want to reach out to people, just think twice about it.
Yeah.
If you're not going to be able to move past that in that tone or in that email, you know,
don't do it. Yeah, yeah.
Don't do it. Agreed. Because it's a really important thing to get right.
Yeah.
Actually, just go and look after yourself for the day, or think about your product or why you're not getting traction.
Yeah.
And decide either the world is mad and people don't understand it yet, or maybe there's something for you to change or understand.
Yeah.
It might be that the world is mad and they just haven't quite got what you're doing yet.
Yeah.
That's fine. But just pause.
Yeah.
Even if it's just for a day or a few hours. Don't do it frustrated in terms of like waking up and thinking something's going to fucking happen today because I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't know what the person's going through at the other end. Because, you know, bigger business, but same pressures, right? I mean, pressure's not... The pressure doesn't change. There's this sort of myth that, you know, it just gets easier. It is different. It's totally different. And in many respects, you know, maybe I have a bit more space now to think. It's not necessarily something that I bathe in because it creates a lot of stress for me. I've got to learn the skill of relaxing or not panicking, right?
But that
sense of it being... Well, they've got all that and like all the support and all the people. It's like, but they're all flat out. That's why they work here.
And if
we didn't have them, we wouldn't be fulfilling our obligations to the customers that we've got.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we don't have
the time.
The time.
No, of course. And I think it's really great. And actually, when we spoke at Bread and Jam as well, and the reason why I wanted to get you on is A, because I love the journey that you guys have been on. I've seen you a lot more on your personal brand come out on LinkedIn over the last few months. But then also I loved the tone, exactly what you're doing now, where like there's a tendency
when we were speaking with Gorillaz.
Yeah, and the tone for like, there's founders in the room, like, don't send an email if you haven't done the proper work. And I loved the way that it was like, there's a tendency in a lot of people to be a bit fluffy with founders because they don't want to hurt their feelings. And I love the way that you will just get out there, and because it's more helpful to people listening to you talk now, being like, it is fucking hard, get on with it and do it this way.
Yeah.
Than it is being like, it's okay, don't worry, just send another email. Like,
yeah,
it's not helpful.
No,
to
and the buyers were really clear as well, weren't they? When the buyers were like, because it was interesting because some of the questions were like, how quickly can I chase, you know, chase the buyer?
Yeah,
and the buyers were like, you know, giving answers of like, I need 10 days. Or some insight into like just how paranoid and difficult it gets, right?
You know?
And then even still, like, I'm waiting for a couple of people to come back to me, right? Really important new business. And I'm like, can I chase them again?
Yeah, you know,
but like it doesn't change. Like it's never easy.
Yeah.
It's
I love it.
Why should it be?
Yeah, of course. And that's why you hear the success stories and they're few and far between, right? Because it is fucking tough. And getting to that point.
Like, it's hard work, but probably a lot better than working for somebody.
Oh my God,
right?
Yeah.
So I think that element of founding a business and following your passion and wanting to go on a journey, I think is really brave and it should be celebrated a lot more. And I think that everyone's a lot better at celebrating it to an extent now. You know, I think when I started Whole Good, that I was terrified of what I would be thought of if I failed. Or I remember, like, you know, really having challenging times with my mental health and in the early days and thinking, oh yeah, but if anyone like knew I was depressed, they're never going to back me I think everyone's a lot better at being open about the challenge now.
Yeah.
So I think everybody speaks about that a lot more openly and they're not judged for it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it doesn't feel like that long ago. I guess it is. But like 14, 15 years ago, you would be scared to mention mental health.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then actually I started to see, and that become more public and people would talk about the challenge. I'd be like, Oh, great. Okay, so there's not going to be a massive bias towards that if people find out that, you know, you're not very well or, so I think it's a little bit, people understand a bit more now that journey.
Yeah.
And people don't judge that, what people would think as failure, but it's not.
Because
it's people trying.
Yeah.
And endeavouring to follow their dream.
Yeah.
So I think that regardless of it being hard, you know, sometimes I think, like, you know, if I'm scared of where I am in my business for some, you know, anything that some, a crisis or whatever, right, is always something to be worried about. But, you know, you think, why did I do it? Or why am I worrying? And then you suddenly realize that, you know, if I was working somewhere, I'd just probably be thinking, oh, they're going to replace me with someone younger next year.
Yeah,
you know,
so
that worry is going to reside in you.
Of course it is.
Wherever you are.
Yeah.
So actually, if you deal with that worry as a founder or as an employee in a large corporation, that fear resides in you.
Yeah.
And you have to make a conscious decision to not be scared and manage that fear and understand where it's coming from. Because while there might be threats to your business in various ways, there will be solutions to overcome them.
Yeah.
But actually, we often get blinded by that fear.
Yeah.
And then we start to make poor decisions.
Yeah, I love that.
And I think that's really key, is that you, when you're thinking about why the fuck did I do it, you know, if you didn't, you would just be thinking, why the fuck did I not do it?
Agreed. I completely agree.
So you might as well go with the.
Mate, I love that. And I think that's a perfect time to wrap up. Just before we sort of say goodbye, where can listeners find you, follow you, reach out to you?
Well, they can find me on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, Whole Good's where it should be in all the social channels.
Yeah.
Our product, our fresh produce, is available on Ocado and Milk and More, lots of independent retailers. Gorillas, GoPuff.
Great.
So, if they want to support us that way, they can. But yeah, if anyone, you know, particularly brands, if, you know, I'm, they can find me on LinkedIn.
Great.
And I might not respond to them immediately. please forgive me. But I always endeavour to make sure that I get back to everybody that has a question, because, you know, why would you not?
Amazing. You're such a legend, mate. And thank you so much for coming on Untold. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. We could sit here and chat all day, right?
But yeah, we could, but it'd be boring as fuck.
All right, matey, thanks so much. Take care.
Cheers. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
you so much for giving us your time and listening. I really hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed, please, please, please do download, subscribe, tell your friends' friends, tell your friend's mum's dog. It all really helps us grow the podcast, ultimately bring on more guests, which will be able to get us to give across more tangible takeaways. Thank you so much again. I'm Harry Turpin, your host, founder of The Savourists. We love you lots. Take care. Keep jiggling.